These days, we read quite a bit in the media about how to live as cheaply as possible. Martin Lewis has almost cornered the market as the money-saving expert. Even he, though, is unlikely to be able to do as well as a woman called Kath Kelly, a cash-strapped teacher who some years ago bet her friends that she could live on just £1 a day for a whole year, and won. Her motivation came from thinking she'd be unable to afford to buy her brother a wedding present. And though you might say she cheated by not including the cost of household energy bills or the dentist, nonetheless, she managed on £1 a day to include all her other expenses, including transport, food, clothes, and socialising. She scavenged food at the end of the day from supermarkets or restaurants that was being sold off for next to nothing or thrown out. She picked fruit from the bushes and trees. She ditched her mobile phone and cycled to friends' houses if she wanted to speak to them, leaving a note if they were out. She used the library for free internet access. If there was a public event and a crowd needed, like an art opening or a book launch, she went there, both as a way of being entertained for nothing and because these occasions often included a free buffet. She even managed a free trip to France by hitchhiking through the Channel Tunnel. Of course, not everyone could live for £1 a day in that way. The supermarkets can only afford to throw out perfectly good food because the amount they succeeded in selling to the rest of us earlier in the day. Even in the big city where she lived, at Bristol, there'd only be a limited number of book launches and lectures with free buffets thrown in. Nonetheless, there was something attractive to many about Kath Kelly's story. Perhaps for some, because financial difficulties have meant that we have had to trim our budget. For many, by a few percentage points to cope with rising prices. Perhaps for some, by a much larger amount to respond to a significant loss of income. For others, though, Kath Kelly's story may have had its attraction from the opposite awareness, that despite doing pretty well financially over the last few years and being able to afford as much as ever, it hasn't brought the happiness or fulfillment in life that we might have imagined it would. And our first Bible reading contained a similar sentiment in its invitation to turn our focus from the things around us to the Lord. Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and he who has no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk, without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labour for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourself in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me, hear that your soul may live. And I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David. I'm aware, of course, that sometimes our experience is that if something is free or very cheap, it may not be worth very much. The phone call we get from a call centre announcing we've won a free holiday will almost certainly turn out to require us to buy some expensive flights to get there. Almost all will have some item in our house that we bought because it seemed like a bargain and which bugs us now because we realise it was rather cheap and nasty. But on the other hand, of course, we know from our own experience that the things we value most in this world are generally not the kind of things you can pay for. Over the years, there have been several songs which capture this important realization in the line, "The best things in life are free." Google tells me the first song with that title appeared in a 1920s musical and then in a 50s movie and reminded people, "The stars belong to everyone. They gleam there for you and me. The flowers in spring, the robins that sing, the sunbeams that shine, they're yours, they're mine, and love can come to everyone. The best things in life are free." Then there was the more recent Janet Jackson and Luther Vandross number focusing rather more on romantic love. The Beatles made a similar point, in their case focusing on the limitations of what money could buy in the song Can't Buy Me Love. And if the things that the majority of us value most in the here and now can't be bought by money, is it any surprise to learn that what is of most value in the universe and for eternity is similarly unrelated to what we have in our bank accounts? For in these verses from the Old Testament, we have the Lord offering an invitation to all to come to him and discover a satisfaction and a purpose and a fulfillment that is beyond anything we can discover here on earth. What's more, in coming to know him for ourselves, we discover something that's not only beyond the material things that money can buy. More than that, in many ways, it's beyond the best things of this world that the songs we mentioned earlier celebrated, beyond even the wonders of the natural world and human love. First of all, because good though these things are, they're all temporal. A man walked into a jewellery store to buy his girlfriend an engagement ring. Looking beside the glass case, he came across an exquisite band with a handsome-sized rock in its centre. "How much," he asked the salesman, "is this ring?" "That's a beautiful piece," the salesman replied. "Goes for £10,000. "Goodness me," the man explained, "that's a lot of money." "Yes, but a diamond is forever," he was assured. "Perhaps," he replied, "but I'm not entirely sure my marriage will last that long." Thankfully, many marriages do continue till death us do part. But even that isn't forever. The glories of nature that the old song focused on, similarly, aren't eternal. Whereas God offers us a relationship with him which will never end. "I will make an everlasting covenant with you," he promises in verse 3. And then secondly, the difference with the things that we might appreciate here and now is that God's invitation is available to all. That's not true of human love, of course. In marriage, only one person will be lucky enough to land the most desirable catch. God's invitation extends to every single one, though, whatever the past. Even if a person's life so far has been particularly wicked or neglectful of God, verse 7 promises, "Let him return to the Lord, that he may have compassion on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon." And so the encouragement is, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. The implication there is that the amount of time in a person's life where there may be sufficient interest in spiritual matters for faith to be within our grasp may be limited. And if we're to get anywhere with God, if we're wise, we'll need to seize the moment. If you've had a pet, you will probably have had the stress of it escaping. We had that with a dog, and before that, a guinea pig, Max, who escaped one day into a big group of bushes. And for something like an hour, there were two of us watching little Max from either side, sometimes seeing him go out of view, most of the time being visible but surrounded by shrubbery and uncatchable. Only very occasionally was he in a bit of a gap. And with enough of a chance to have a hope of grasping him or trapping him. A moment's hesitation, and he was somewhere else. Well, thankfully, the opportunity did come to grasp hold of little Max and to return him to the safety of his enclosure. But had we not bothered to pursue him, or had we not seized the chance when it came, he could easily have been lost for good. We couldn't just go off and do something else and take it for granted he'd still be there when we came back later. Sadly, though, many do that with God. There's a time when we're aware of big spiritual questions, but we know these things are rather complicated, and we're tempted to say, "Let's leave that till later." But then many other things in life seem more pressing, and maybe that moment to consider the Lord never actually comes. So Isaiah's advice is clear. Seek the Lord while he may be found. And if we're wondering how to do that, the clearest explanation comes in verse 2, when God says, listen diligently to me. Verse 3, when he says, incline your ear and come to me. Hear that your soul may live. We can hear God's voice today reliably through the scriptures. Perhaps in coming to church to hear it explained. Perhaps through being part of a small study group. There'll be a new course launching after Easter. Perhaps through reading the scriptures for ourselves. And through God's word, we are promised information, yes, wisdom, yes. But more than that, in Isaiah 55, the promise is, verse 2, the spiritual equivalent of rich food to delight in. Verse 3, that your soul may live. Pointed to God's steadfast, sure love for each one of us. And what's more, all this is available completely free.